ding ding.
How about we can just watch basketball?
How about we can just watch basketball?
Green, the angles up toward the rim, gets her beat, he'll turn, got off the shot and hit it! Oh my, there's gonna count the bucket! But review, Embiid, a catch, a turn, a shot, and a score!
Welcome to the Daily Ding, I'm your host Andrew Schlecht, and with me tonight, it's Clippers beat writer at The Athletic, Law Murray. Law, what's up?
We had some great games in the Eastern Conference, the opposite conference, Andrew.
Woo! This was quite a night. The number of the night is 17. Two 17-point deficits erased. KD and Kyrie go 1 for 17 from the field in the second half. But Law, we're going to start in Toronto, where the 76ers win in dramatic fashion, 104-101. Let's paint a picture, because the drama was just palpable throughout really the end of regulation and then through overtime. It was just an unbelievable scene in Toronto. And it started with this drive from James Harden, incredibly difficult to defend. He gets to the cup, Fred VanVleet fouls him. It's 95-94 at this point. You think, wow, there's less than a minute left. James Harden's going to sink these. What happened, Law?
Well, James Harden splits the free throws, and it wound up being the last time he touched the basketball because next time down, Precious Achiuwa, who is absolutely bull in a china shop, no matter what position the positionless Raptors put him in, like, Precious Achiuwa is going to shake them dreads, man, and get into the lane somehow, you know. And not only is it Harden's sixth foul, but Doc Rivers challenges, tries to save his guy, and couldn't do it. So James Harden fouls out. Sixers lose their challenge. Precious Achiuwa goes to the free throw line. Scores tied. The Raptors had never trailed at this point.
Yeah.
Precious misses both free throws.
He misses both. Oh. And then, like, Raptors fans can breathe a little bit because Embiid misses a step back three. Tobias Harris misses a little bunny, and we go to overtime. And overtime is just as crazy. And I want to start with 26 seconds left. OG Anunoby's at the free throw line, and he ties it 101. He's got his second free throw, and this thing looks like cash. And it hits, and it rolls around, and it doesn't even roll off the front of the rim. It rolls off the back side of the rim, which is just, it was an unusual looking free throw. And it just made it, honestly, like, for Raptors fans, like, that one, like, really hurt.
You can't recreate that missed free throw. And you have to remember the last time the 76ers were in that building for a playoff game was game 7 in 2019, when Kawhi Leonard, his baseline jumper over Joel past Ben Simmons hits every damn part of the opposite rim to win that game. Now, why the Raptors switched up which side of the basket that they're in, I don't remember if that's a home team thing or a road team thing, but the Raptors probably wish that they kept it the same because, hey, going back to Precious Achiuwa, he had a heads-up play, swipes at Joel Embiid. That thing is headed out of bounds. Embiid recovers it. And Doc Rivers, you saw it, Andrew. He just sprints and makes sure that he gets that timeout, which I should probably plug. Y'all, see, you got me on the timeout story on head coaches, and I should probably plug that because Doc Rivers, I talked to him about timeouts. It's like, sometimes you just got to let the rest know that you need a timeout. And I mean,
he let him know. He ran out of the coach's box. He ran in front of Drake and in front of Nick Nurse to get the timeout. It was unbelievable. Okay, just for at least one day, everybody, stop hating on Doc Rivers. Give him one day because he called this timeout, because this timeout saved the game. They were 0.9 seconds away from getting a shot clock violation. Like, if he didn't do that, it's shot clock violation, it's Raptors ball, tie game. Like, that's what was at stake here.
And not only that, but the play call was outstanding. I mean, It was the 0.9 seconds or however much time was left on the shot clock version of Derek Fisher's 0.4 from 2004. I mean, how Joel got that free was that's already your coach's win. The coach wins that right there. Called the timeout, drew up something to get a player a great look. Yep. But the execution is all Embiid. Everybody, I mean, Embiid's been clowned for 3 years for crying leaving Scotiabank Arena. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was as good a revenge as you can get besides actually eliminating the Raptors, which because Joel hit that shot, he can obviously complete the sweep as soon as I believe game four would be Saturday.
Yeah, I believe that's right. Yeah. It's wild, especially the perception. And some of this is due to injury and no Scotty Barnes tonight for the Raptors. But still, for this team, after the rocky way they ended the regular season, to be up 3-0 against the Raptors team, who was, let's face it, this is the NBA sweetheart team. Like, everybody loved this team. Everybody was rooting for this team. I think a lot of people picked the Raptors. I thought the Raptors were going to win. They played like the team that was going to win the series at the end of the regular season. And you have to credit Joel Embiid, number one, who was unbelievable. 33 points, 13 boards, 2 assists, and a block. James Harden was good for them tonight. 19 points, 10 assists, 6 rebounds. He did foul out of this game. And then Tyrese Maxey was not the Tyrese Maxey of game one, but he was, again, very solid. 19 points, 4 boards, 1 assist. And they played really good basketball, and Danny Green hit some timely corner threes. He made some like really, really nice cuts. Embiid found him, and you know, they got everything they needed.
I think we got to at least touch on the fact that the Raptors were up 17 in this game with the energy of that crowd. Remember that crowd, forget not having a playoff game in that building since the championship run of 2019. Like 2020, they were going to host minimum, given how they went all the way to the semifinals. They were going to have a game 7 in that building, but instead it was in the bubble against the Celtics. That they didn't get that. Last year, it was the Tampa Raptors, and the Raptors decided they weren't even trying to make the playoffs, which got them Scotty Barnes, but obviously, you know, snapped their postseason streak, which was among the longest in the East, I believe, when it was snapped. So the energy was there and the Raptors matched it. They forced so many turnovers off the Philadelphia 76ers. I think they had 15, the Sixers had 15 turnovers and 17 made field goals in the first half. Yeah. And
finished with 22 turnovers. 22 to 10 was the number.
And to battle back, because it's not like the Sixers made up for that with offensive rebounding. Like this was a game where they literally had to just survive just from getting blown out. And then that third quarter from Joel Embiid was the masterpiece before the shot that he made at the end of overtime, because he scored 18 points. He dished Niang for a 3. Like, the Sixers made a comeback, not by hitting threes, but by just going to Joel repeatedly. And Joel delivered in a 12-minute third quarter. On the flip side, Pascal Siakam had a 12-point first half, and he never scored again after halftime. Yep. And that absolutely hurts when you're talking about the difference between 2-1 with a game 4 at home for Toronto, and now you're down 3-0, and that's an insurmountable lead in NBA history as far as 7-game series are concerned.
Yeah. Big shouts to OG Anunoby. Tied his career high, 26 points for the Raptors tonight, but it just wasn't enough. Now let's go to Boston, where this game. Man. Oh, I mean, I just have to start with some big love to Bruce Brown, who started the game 9-0 just by himself against the Celtics. It was kind of hilarious the way it started, because you have like these big names like Tatum, Durant, Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown, and then it's no. It's Bruce Brown scoring the first 9 points of this game, fellas. That's awesome.
Yeah, and the way he did it was completely in control. You know, it wasn't like he's going rogue or anything. And he needed it. I mean, Kyrie Irving, you saw him first time out or so of the game. They let him know it's sunset And, you know, he went to the locker room and he got himself refreshed as he's fasting for Ramadan. But that was a critical start by Bruce Brown, because like it pretty much gave the Brooklyn Nets a cushion that they had more or less for three quarters. For three quarters, he's scoring what he goes up by himself, as you mentioned, 9-0. And I don't think for the rest of the first half, Boston got closer than 6 points in the first half, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, third quarter, that's when Boston started to make some inroads. They tied the game a couple of times, but Boston still never took the lead through the first three quarters of the game. And Bruce Brown was looking like a hero, a villain, if considering, you know, he's from Boston. He reps Boston. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. He was not getting booed. The Boston crowd was very into this game, which like upped the entertainment value of the night. Cause they were booing and chanting, Kyrie sucks. I mean, it was wonderful. Like the playoff environment was just spectacular in Boston tonight. And then seeing them make the run and like the hype of the crowd, like get behind them. Like not only was this team like scrapping and playing like really a great brand of physical basketball, but like the crowd getting into it too, was just like that other element where you're like, man, like I love this. And, you know, we've missed like big time crowds, you know, and to have this back and for it to feel like relatively normal is like, it's just a cool, I think it's a cool NBA moment just to watch this Boston Celtics team.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, that crowd, it looks like they had an impact and wore. It's crazy to say, oh, the crowd wore these guys down, but what else can you say? Because I mean, Seth Curry, he hits the first shot, first possession of the fourth quarter, right? Mm-hmm. Takes that 7-point lead. And Brooklyn never scored again with the lead. They never scored again with the lead. By the time Kyrie hits a shot, you know, I think 5 minutes later of game time, Boston had already gone on a decisive 11-0 run, and that was that. And it was shocking how Brooklyn had absolutely nothing to curb that run. It was one run, bang, and that was it. Yep. That was representative of the changing of the guard as far as game two is concerned.
Yeah, and if you're the Nets, there's loads of concerning things. Like one, like the level of physicality like between you and the Celtics was dramatic. Like the Celtics were just the much more physical team. And that even dropped off a ton for the Nets in the second half. Like you could tell that they just didn't have it in them. And then also you look over at the Celtics and their offense, like this was by committee. You know, you get 17 points from Grant Williams, Al Horford chips in 16, Daniel Tice had 15, Marcus Smart with 12, Jaylen Brown with 22. Tatum did not have a great night shooting the basketball. He had 19 points on 16 shots. I mean, there was no like big, I mean, I guess really the only big time outlier game is that Grant Williams didn't miss a shot, but we're talking about four shots. We're not talking about 12 shots or anything from him. I mean, they're still primed to have a Jason Tatum 50-point game coming up here. I mean, that's just like the way that this Boston team functions. And so if you're over there looking, I don't know that Ben Simmons is the guy that I'm looking to as my hero here.
Yeah, man. I mean, what's Ben Simmons going to do? Like you can play decent defense. If you're Brooklyn, they defended Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown respectably well for most of this game. I mean, as you mentioned, Tatum missed 11 out of 16. Tatum got to the line plenty to balance that out. That's how he got his points for the most part. Jaylen, he actually ended the game with a team high 22. You know, he did a lot of great things as far as finishing in the second half because he was 6-12 in the second half. But the key for Jaylen Brown was he stopped turning the ball over because Brooklyn did a great job forcing turnovers. Brooklyn actually won the possession battle. They won that part of it. This game just really came down to Boston had guys who finished the game and Brooklyn just simply did not. And you just don't, we don't cover Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant as quote unquote guys who don't close. And those guys did not close the game, period. Like Kevin came out of half third quarter. We weren't even thinking about, oh, KD missed every damn shot in the third quarter because Goran Dragic was actually doing some work, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, look, you just don't look at, oh, he went 0 for 5. Kyrie went 0 for 3. They still had the lead. They still had the lead. They still were doing all right. But man, the fourth quarter just, it didn't get better. Kevin missed every shot that he took that wasn't a free throw after halftime. And Kyrie, he made the one shot in the fourth quarter that didn't, you know, just ended the 11-0 run. But that was it for him. He didn't even get to the free throw line. Mm-hmm. How unguardable, like, nah, Boston's defense is legit. It's scary.
It's legit.
And if that thing travels, that's the series, Andrew.
Totally agree. Yeah. And I'd be surprised if they didn't at least split in Brooklyn with just the way that this Boston team is rolling. And to me, it's about regular season habits translating to the playoffs, because the Nets feel like they can just roll the ball out and they're just going to play. Well, like, no, like what you're bringing with you, what you did all regular season, that's was not play great defense and just hope that you can just survive on talent alone. Whereas Boston has been just destroying teams for the last 3 months. They've been playing the best defense in the NBA. You've seen a leap from Jason Tatum, and then you've had their role players stepping up. Like you've had Derek White sliding in. He didn't play a ton tonight, but he just slides in and makes plays for them. Peyton Pritchard shot the ball pretty well for them tonight. I mean, they just have guys that know how to play. They know how to play together, and they have a great game plan. And the coaching, I mean, I don't know how to assess Steve Nash as a coach. I really just don't. But I can tell you, Ime Udoka has done a spectacular job with this Boston team.
And you know what, man? When you talk about habits, that's a great point, Andrew, because what were we talking about with Boston at the turn of the new year? We were basically saying how Ime may be too hard on these guys. Like Marcus Smart literally told Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown that they don't pass the ball. Like, it's hilarious to me now because look at where things are. But, like, nah, like, people were literally, like, not giving Ime Udoka any kind of rope. And, look, a critical game, too, where they're down 17. They're already not a deep team. And you got one guy who fouled out now, Horford, tonight. Derek White, the reason he played only 13 minutes is because he picked up 3,000 in the first quarter. And they still stuck to an 8-man rotation through all that. But look at Jason Tatum. 10 assists, right? Jaylen Brown, he had the turnover issues in the first half. He still is forgiving of the ball. 6 assists. How did they win that game in game one? Again, that's the one they should have lost, you know?
Yep.
Game-winning dime by Smart to Tatum, who cut because KD wasn't looking, because KD relaxed. That is your microcosm of this series. Like, Boston, they took all the crap all season up until the All-Star break, basically, about how they might not have the right coach, they might not have the right guys, they might not have the right pieces, or they might not have a point guard at all. Turns out, maybe they do, and they're playing like it. And Brooklyn is playing like a group of guys who, you know, still might be wearing name tags for all I know. I mean, Ben Simmons, he gonna start? He gonna play? He gonna jump into a series with Brooklyn having a must-win? I'm sure Ben's gonna handle all that just fine. Little bit of sarcasm there, maybe. I wish the best for Ben. I just genuinely don't think this is the best situation for him to debut on this team after not playing since passing up a potential game-tying dunk in a game 7. I'm just saying it'll be quite the thing to watch for as this series progresses.
Totally agree.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men, defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Let's go to Milwaukee, where the Bulls are back, baby. 114 to 110. DeMar DeRozan, just a bucket. 41 points on 31 shots tonight. 7 rebounds, 4 assists, only 2 turnovers. He was unbelievable tonight. Vucci Main, 24 points, 13 boards. He was awesome tonight as well. And then you got Zach LaVine with 20 points and Alex Caruso, who only finished with 9 points and 10 assists. But like the contributions that he was making on the defensive end were tremendous. Like the Bulls deserve a ton of credit for the way that they came back in game 2.
Yeah, and you have to give them credit for just sticking to what they do. Like DeMar missed a bunch of shots. People were digging up his playoff failures. And yep, that was the easy narrative to go with after game 1. But what are you going to have to do after this game is go back to the DeMar that you saw all season long. He trusted in that mid-range game. And he didn't even get off to a great start in this one. He missed his first 3 mid-range shots in the first quarter of this one. You know, he got to the paint in the first half overall. And then that third quarter, when the Milwaukee, especially Giannis, he started tapping into some energy that he didn't have. The Bulls didn't collapse when they built their, turns out yep, they got up to 18-point lead. See, 17-point lead, you might smoke that one. But an 18-point lead makes all the difference in the world. And DeMar, his mid-range game in that third quarter is it's not what propelled the Bulls. It kept the Bulls from collapsing. He made all yes, 5 of his mid-range shots in the third quarter. He wasn't nearly as good in the fourth. But the fact that he just kept playing his game, I think that was a calming influence for everybody else. Like Zach LaVine only took 13 shots. Like Zach LaVine mm-hmm, didn't have a very efficient game in game 1 either. And here he goes, 20 points on a very quiet 13 shot attempts. Vucevic, a lot of his shots were just because someone had to shoot besides DeMar. Like the only guys who got double digit shot attempts in this game were DeMar, Vucevic, Zach LaVine. All those guys were terrible in game 1 if you just look at their shots from field. Vucevic took 27 shots in game 1 and only made 9 of them. Well, he took 9 fewer shots in game 2 and made 1 more yep, shot. 10 of 18 for 24 points, including a really big 3 after DeMar, because what happened was Milwaukee was like, we're not letting this guy get to his spots. So they started double teaming them, and DeMar started getting off the ball a little bit. Vucevic hit a big shot to, again, help make sure that the Bulls didn't completely collapse. That is huge. It reminded me a lot of what we saw from Brandon Ingram in Phoenix the night before. He just yep, kept playing his game. That mid-range game, if you let guys get comfortable and the Bucks don't put a lot of pressure on you defensively, especially if Giannis isn't in the game or if Giannis has already used his turbo effort charge, then what's going to happen is the game's going to really come down to who hits shots and who doesn't. And tonight, Chicago mm-hmm, hit shots and Milwaukee didn't. And as you know, Andrew, the concern is now for Milwaukee, they have a big shot taker who is out indefinitely now.
Yeah, that's the big news from this game. Not only the Bulls win, but Middleton has a sprained MCL, which they announced like pretty quickly after this game. You thought maybe they'd sit on that a little bit, but it looks like it could be pretty serious for him. And Milwaukee doesn't have a lot of answers if Middleton's out. Like who's going to step up here? I mean, tonight you had Wes Matthews playing 34 minutes for them. I mean, I'm not sure what the answer is. I still think that obviously they can beat the Chicago Bulls in this series. I believe that they can, but I think questions start to emerge of how long is he actually going to be out, and how much could that damper the second round if they get there?
Yeah. What's going to have to happen for the Milwaukee Bucks is they're going to need the threes to fall, and they're going to have to turn it up defensively because,
yep,
simply put, DeMar can't be so comfortable that he gets 41 points like this, you know. And you're in a situation also where Chris Middleton was on the ball a ton. Like he had 8 assists tonight mm-hmm, in 32 mm-hmm, minutes. You know, so you're missing a guy who can relieve Giannis as a playmaker, relieve Jrue Holiday, who obviously you got to pick who Jrue Holiday is going to defend between LaVine and DeRozan. I would yeah, put Jrue on DeMar, but then again, DeMar is going to get to his spots. Like, I'd make him uncomfortable. I would honestly put Drew on DeMar and put Wes, who has to start, who has to play, on someone like LaVine, because at least LaVine is clear he doesn't have the same burst as he had in the first half of the season. You're going to have to take them bets. And again, Chicago, they did their job. They took home court advantage. That series is a whole lot more interesting today than it was a week ago.
Yep. Headed back to Chicago, tied 1-1. And that's going to do it for today's show. Check out Point of Contention. It's up next. Law, take us out.
Ding, ding.